Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Penn Holderness. Thank you so much for... for listening to the Holderness Family Podcast.
So many ways to consume the content.
There is. There are. I'm off to a banging start today.
Well, we hope you're having a good day. So this is the part where we read a review, and I'll be really transparent. This week, my friend Leanne, who works with us, she chose the review. And it's lovely, and it's so complimentary. But if you thought that like I picked this out, you'd be like, Kim, slow your roll. You're not that good of
a
person.
It. Okay. So are you saying it's very nice
it's
and
very
complimentary?
Nice, but I don't want it to be like, oh my God. Yeah.
And you feel the need to explain
that.
But
when you leave a review, it helps like people find us and blah, blah, blah. So it's we're supposed to remind you to leave a review. And then if we give an example... Anyway, yeah. So Penn, do you want to read it?
Sure. Well, I want to ask this question before I read the review. Is the reason why you feel the need to explain this because there was a TikTok video today of you purposely singing bad and a woman commented that you need voice lessons?
So wait a second. No, read the review and then okay. We'll get into that.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. The review that I see in front of me here is from Shermanator 18. Love the name. Kim and Penn are probably the greatest couple on the internet. Sorry. Every episode makes me smile and laugh. I've found myself singing along to Penn's Would You Rather song. Thanks for continuing to put out a podcast that makes me smile and makes me ponder about life.
That's really sweet.
I'm not laughing at you, Shermanator. I'm laughing because that's quite high praise that I'm sure is not right. But thank you.
But anyway, if you subscribed and left a review, thank you. I get so. Why do I get so uncomfortable when somebody says something nice about me?
I believe that you get uncomfortable when someone says anything about you, like one way or the other.
No. I was like, okay, so we put out this like real TikTok, whatever today, where I was like how I think I sound in my head versus what I actually sound like when I'm singing. And I did ham it up a little bit. Like my singing voice is not great, which is why I don't sing in the videos.
No, but you have a great singing voice.
It's not, but I'm fine with that. I don't need to have a great singing voice. I mean, I desperately wish I had like one of those amazing voices, but I don't need it. It's fine. My life is full. But so yeah, somebody said, yeah, you should get singing lessons. That didn't offend me. I laughed at that.
Okay, I'm glad. Me. So, yeah. And I want to say that one thing that people don't know about you, Kim, that I don't even think you know about yourself, is that when you don't think anyone's listening to you and you're relaxed, like if you're in the shower or you're humming something, you have a beautiful singing voice. I definitely can tell you're nervous when someone else is watching you and you're singing, which is crazy. Like you really do have a beautiful singing voice.
Thank you. But that's the thing. It's like my life is full in a lot of ways, and that's just, you know, in my next life, I'll come back as a Broadway superstar. But I don't need it.
You're just being nice because that's my thing and you don't want to take my thing. Kind of like when you just randomly mentioned to me that you were a state champion pianist when you were growing up.
No, I was like nine. But so still, I wasn't.
That's anyway, unbelievable.
Moving on. We have a great episode for you today. We're calling up a friend, Dr. Lisa Damore.
Come on. Let's call up. Talking about, yeah.
love the expert song. Okay, this is Dr. Lisa DeMore. She was on the podcast last fall. We talked to her about tackling teenage transitions and the difference between healthy and unhealthy anxiety. We'll put that episode in the show notes too. So impactful. I'm a super fan of hers, and I've talked a lot about her books, and we'll also link to her books as well. But let me get to her bio so you understand why I'm such a super fan. Recognized as a thought leader by the American Psychological Association, Dr. Lisa DeMore co-hosts the Ask Lisa podcast, writes about teenagers for the New York Times, appears as a regular contributor to CBS News, and works in collaboration with UNICEF.
She is the author of two New York Times bestsellers, Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood, which, by the way, was on Kim's bedside table and I think was life-changing.
Still is, yes.
And Under Pressure, Confronting the Epidemic of Stress and Anxiety in Girls.
Dr. DeMore serves as a senior advisor to the Schubert Center for Child Studies at Case Western Reserve University and has written numerous academic papers, chapters, and books related to education and child development. She maintains a private practice and also speaks to schools, professional organizations, corporate groups around the world, and talking about family mental health, adolescent development, adult well-being. She graduated from Yale.
Yes, she worked for the Yale Child Study Center before earning her doctorate in clinical psychology at the University of Michigan. She's been a fellow at Yale's Edward Ziegler Center in Child Development and Social Policy and the University of Michigan's Power Foundation. She and her husband are the proud parents of two daughters.
We have a lot to get to. I really wanted to read her entire bio because she earned it. So welcome, Dr. Lisa DeMore.
So welcome, Dr. Lisa DeMore. You know, I always start with, first of all, it's great to see and hear from you again. I always ask this to people, do I call you Dr. DeMore, Dr. Lisa, Lisa? Like, how do you like to be addressed?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me back.
Of course.
I love being with the two of you. And also thank you for asking about what I should be called. So I've kind of gone on a journey with this. I used to be like, oh, call me Lisa. I don't mind one bit. And I really myself don't mind. But then a colleague of color helpfully pointed out to me, said, you know, when you who have so much privilege are so casual about these titles, because you can be, it makes it that much harder for those of us where we do need people to use our titles mm-hmm. in order to be recognized for the level of training we have. It makes us that much harder for us to ask. Mm-hmm. And that's all she said. And I was like, oh my gosh, first of all, thank you. So it's made me less casual about it. So why don't we go with Dr. DeMore or Dr. Lisa, because we've known each other a while.
Yeah.
But in the name of not flexing my privilege all day long by being like, call me whatever you want.
Yeah.
Let's go with one of those doctors.
I love that. And I also love, as a woman, anytime I see a woman who has earned a title, I want to use it because you worked really hard. And I have sat in rooms where men did not pay attention to anything I said, but then it's the second pen said it became valid. So yeah. I do know that a title brings that, you know, gravitas, and sometimes you do need to use it. So Dr. DeMore, thanks for coming. And I love this conversation yeah. already.
I knew she would have a super cool answer to that question.
Yes.
Because she has super cool answers to everything. And so, and I'm really hoping you have an answer to this for me, Dr. Lisa. So here's where I am right now. And this is something that's happened to me over the last 6 to 9 months that I have wanted to write about or to talk about, and I've needed some guidance on it. But I'm just going to tell you my subjective experience from it. I have a daughter who is 15 years old, who is 5'10", and is stunning. She has grown up. She's become a young woman. Every other part of her has also grown up. She has become funny. She's become mature. She's become strong. And I remember hearing people say this when I was younger and not even batting an eyelash or freaking out about it, where someone grows, comes of age, and what the man or the dad or the friend of the dad says to the dad is, huh, you're in trouble, or like, watch out, as if to say, okay, your daughter's beautiful now. The boy suitors are going to come, and this is going to turn into a bunch of complications for you, and your life is about to get a lot worse. And mm-hmm. so, all right, she normally is a kind of a stay at home, wear pajamas type of person, but she got dressed up and went to a wedding recently, and I got three from people who I know very well, even relatives who said, boy, you're in trouble. And I know they mean well when they say it. I really do. I think they're trying to compliment the fact that my daughter's grown into a beautiful woman, but it bothered me when they said it.
Yeah.
Mainly because it just feels like now that I have a daughter, it feels like they're saying that she can't handle herself. And by God, Lola can handle herself.
Yeah, my money's on Lola.
The crap out of anybody, I think. But I just wanted to share that story with you and see if that's something that you've come across or something that you've addressed.
Oh, thank you. It's so rich, right? This interaction, this repeated interaction, we can unpack it in so many directions. And I love the direction you're starting with, which is they mean well, right? They mean well. And I think we want to start with that assumption, because you could also go down the road of like, well, it's super creepy that anyone's talking about my daughter's appearance to me and sexualizing her in ways that are unnecessary. Like, you could go down that road. We don't need to go down that road. I think they mean well. And let's sort of work with that assumption. Mm-hmm. And so, even though it's a little creepy.
But, very creepy.
Yep.
So let's endow these people who are making comments with maybe a fuller version of what the most well-meaning sentiment might be. And maybe what they're saying, and I think this will let us then really kind of flesh this out in terms of how it feels for you as parents, how it might feel for Lola as, you know, a girl coming into the world. Maybe what they're saying is, wow, your daughter who is 15 now looks like an adult woman in very beautiful and attractive ways. Are you ready? Is she ready for the world's reaction to that? Because the world does react to that. We don't want the world to react to that. The world should not react to that. But the world we live in does react to girls as they become more like women. And the line I always think about in this, I'm going to get it wrong, but in Bossy Pants, Tina Fey has a line about something like, you know you're a woman when guys are yelling at you from cars.
Yeah.
And so let's just sort of deal with the fact that, like, guys will yell at women from cars, and they will yell at 15-year-old girls from cars. And is this the worst thing ever? Yes. And should this absolutely not happen? Yes. Does it happen? Yes. Where are you and where is Lola with that? Do you think that we could imagine that's what they mean?
Yeah. I think Penn took this very personally because
it was happening to me.
Because it was happening. And they don't really say those sort of things to me. And so he got very defensive. But I do think that's where it comes from.
I also questioned and wanted to give grace to the people who were saying it, because I remember not thinking that was a bad thing a very mm-hmm. short time ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it questions, like, is she ready? And the answer is, I believe she's as ready as a confident, strong 15-year-old can be. But I'm a woman in my 40s, and I'm sometimes still grossed out by how I'm treated. I mean, people walk up and say, Penn, oh my gosh, you're so funny and creative, and your videos are so brilliant. And Kim, you're pretty. Yeah. And, well, thank you. As a woman in my 40s, I will always take that compliment. But it just kind of diminishes every other thing I've done to build what we do. So yeah. I think there has to be another way and better language for us all to compliment young women, right?
There must. But I also think it's really interesting what you're saying, that they're saying it to Penn, but not to you, Kim.
Right.
Like, what is that when we say this to dads, but not to moms, right?
I think they know that it's a little sexualized. I think they know that, yes, these people mean well. And at some point, let's face it, like, Penn, maybe when you were, I don't know if you, I've never heard you say it, but I do know that people that mean very well say these things.
I'm telling you, I bet I have said it. Guys, you have to understand, we're not that smart when it comes to these things. Like,
you want to pay a compliment, but you don't know what to say.
And that's not an excuse. We should get smarter. But I'll bet you I've said it before. That's one of the reasons it bothered me. I was like, wait, that's not cool. Wait a minute. Have I said that before? I'm just trying to be as honest as possible.
More on this after these words. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too.
That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Intentions aside, let's assume, you know, we all learn as we go and we all grow as we go. What we're getting at here, I think, is something really essential, which is there's something from which now Lola may need protection. Right. So it may not be the guys in her class. Right. She may be able to handle them just fine. But she might need some sense of preparation, or if not protection, certainly preparation for something new. And I think we want to think that through. And the other piece that I think is real, and I think, Penn, when you, if you ever did say anything along these lines, what I assume at the heart of it is we feel protective of our daughters. Mm-hmm. And that's a very loving and appropriate instinct. And I this also may be untrue. Or this may be untrue. The Tina Fey thing is true, but I'm not sure I had it exactly right. But I think when Charles Barkley moved to Phoenix, his daughter, to start playing basketball for them, his daughter was like 12 or something. And I guess some reporter was like, what are you going to do when guys come around to try to date your daughter? He's like, you know, you kill the first one, the word gets out. Right. So that's like, that's Charles Barkley. You know, Charles Barkley says whatever he wants to say.
Yeah.
But he also often cuts to the core of something, which is a fundamental sense of wanting to protect one's kids. And then in this context, wanting to protect one's daughters from what can feel like untoward attention.
Okay. So I hear you on all that. And Charles Barkley's pretty funny.
Yes.
But so what's bothering me now is I do want to protect my daughter. I also want to protect my son. But I don't say, if Penn Charles becomes handsome, I don't think I'm going to be, anyone's going to say to me, like, you're in trouble.
You know what this is interesting. The gender. Say it to me. They go like, oh, he's going to be trouble. He's going to be breaking ladies' hearts. So it's like this really gendered thing that happens. And we do. So let me ask you this, Penn. Do you worry about, or are you, I'm not, worry is not the right word. Do you feel like you need to protect your son the same way you feel the need to protect your daughter?
I think that the family values that were instilled in me by my extended family and by society and everyone else that I know have told me that I have an extra responsibility to protect my daughter over my son, and that my son should be able to handle himself. And then now, but my daughter, listen, Lisa, Dr. Lisa, my daughter could beat the crap out of my son. So that was kind of the note when I was like, what, are we doing this right? But there is this line that I feel like I need to walk where I do want to say, and what I do say when they say, you know, you're in trouble, or I'm like, no, she's pretty strong. But there's this line to walk where I want her to know that I want to protect her. But I also want her to know that she can handle herself.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I don't know if I have that line with my son. Or maybe that's for your job, Kim. It's weird.
I mean, we do see boys as less vulnerable, and there's an element of truth to that. And, you know, he will soon gain more strength than she has, right? I mean, that's going to shift. You know, as boys get bigger and older, they do get stronger. And there's also a lot more latitude in the world for guys to play in a sexualized space and not be called all sorts of names that are really, you know, stick and last and are incredibly double standard. You know, so I think around things that are sexualized and sexual, we have to be honest that we live in a society where men and women, girls and boys are not on equal footing.
I am very aware, raising a daughter and a son, that that is 1,000% true. What's expected of my daughter is very different than what society expects from my son. It was taught to me, or I read in a book at some point when raising these children, that I should find compliments that are beyond their appearance. So, you know, of course, we've told our daughter and our son that, you know, like, oh, you're so, like, you're the cutest one, or like things like that. you know, you lost that tennis match, but you were the cutest, like silly things like that. But we have gone out of our way to find things to compliment that have nothing to do with their appearance. Is that hurting or helping?
I think it's a great place to start, right? And the way I've thought and written about it is really balancing how much we comment on a kid's container versus how much we comment on the contents of that container. And I don't want to diminish, it's fun to dress up. It's fun to take good care of oneself. Like, I have, you know, teenage daughters. Right. And I will watch them, you know, play with makeup in a way that is entirely for their own delight. And I would not want to tell them that that's not an okay thing. But I do think we want to try to strike a balance in terms of commentary on appearance and commentary on other things. But it's okay to take pleasure in one's appearance. And it doesn't even have to be about being attractive. Like, I love looking at, it's mostly teenage girls who like adopt like this entire style that is entirely uniquely their own and quirky and wonderful and fabulous. And it's not about trying to be beautiful or sexy or anything for anybody, but it's their look, and they're having a lot of fun with their look, you know? So there's a lot of room in there to get it right. And we just want to be careful, I think, not to make it too big a thing, or not to make it too much of a yardstick against other people.
That it becomes their entire identity, just their appearance. Yeah. I did ask Lola, you know, I told her we were talking to you, and I said, you know, this was the topic, because she's overheard. I think they say it also sometimes in front of her, too, of like, oh, you know, better be careful, that sort of thing. And I was like, well, how does that make you feel? And she's like, you know, she's neutral about it. She's like, she doesn't pay a lot of attention to what, you know, adults say. She's like, I do wish they knew how smart I was. I do wish they would ask me about how hard I work at tennis and at school. And I thought that was interesting. I think she identified that she's so proud of, like, she would prefer to be known for that than
how
this other
wonderful
thing.
That she can articulate it in just that way. Yeah. You know, that she already has such a strong sense of like, oh, they have no idea what I'm really bringing to the table.
Right.
If they only knew.
I want to be her when I grow up, I have to tell you.
All right. So, I mean, just kind of going back to the original question.
Yeah.
And you gave some great advice of like, maybe the better question to ask or the better thing to say is, you know, your daughter has become an adult woman, you know, a beautiful adult woman. Is she ready for how the world is going to process and receive that? I don't know if I can say that in a cocktail party.
Because no. That'd be weird. That'd be super weird.
You're going to be like, well, okay, Mr. PhD.
you went to Yale.
can we like workshop some other things that guys can say?
Okay.
Other than that?
I think we could start with the premise of like, one option is not commenting on
right. I think that's a good option.
Person's child's appearance. Like, I think
let's start there. Probably,
let's start there. Let's say like option number one, you don't need to go there at all, right? It. And I, my sense is it's a very gut, it's a very reflexive reaction. But since we have the luxury of this podcast and think it through, and we can revisit gut reactions, I think this is probably a good time to say, if you're noticing yourself about to comment on the appearance of somebody else's kid, maybe not.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it. So there's things one could do instead, like say, like, Lola, like, what was your favorite book you read this year? Or Lola, like, is tennis happening? What's it like? I mean, I think people do take an interest in the incredible thriving that is adolescence and the incredible rapid growth and change. And there are other ways to ask about it. But Penn, what I'm wondering for you, because it's going to keep happening.
Yeah.
Is what's a response we could construct for you that
when they say,
when it happens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what I've been going with is when they say she's in trouble, I say,
no, you're in trouble.
I say, no, I don't say you're in trouble. I say, I think anybody who tries to cross her is in trouble. And then I kind of like continue with she's very strong. And she's very smart. And that's kind of it. But I also feel like when I say that, I'm kind of smacking down the person who
it sounds like she's about to arm wrestle somebody too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there might be a better answer, but that's what I've been going with lately. I've said that to like close relatives. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of looked at me like, yeah, that's a good point. But I try to say it with a smile and not in a judgmental kind of way.
I think that's a pretty good reaction, right? Like, you know, she can hold her own, right? I mean, you're sticking up for your kid. You're not humiliating the person who maybe said something reflexive.
Yeah.
You're not making more of it than, you know, maybe they meant by it. In this space where we have time to really think it through, is there some reaction, some response you could have that is with a smile, is entirely friendly, is entirely inviting, but also has a teaching moment, a little bit even more teaching than you're doing? Like, I'm thinking this, I don't have the answer, but I'm they're saying something,
right?
And they're saying something about the ways in which the world is unfair to girls. Mm-hmm. And they're treating it as a bit of a given.
I mean, I have wanted to say in the past, like, isn't it strange that this is never something that's said about a boy?
Like, not one person has come to us and say like, oh, you're in trouble. You know, your son, and he's equally attractive. I don't want him to sound like a, you know, but
yeah,
they've never, because they don't think we need to offer protection. Yeah. I mean, when this is part of like a larger conversation when it comes down to it, like as women, we are way more vulnerable. We've mentioned that. So just to exist in space in this society, like it is actual fact that Lola does have to protect herself in a way that men don't have to think about. But I think we could build awareness around the language. If you feel safe, Penn, would you feel all right responding to a relative to say like, you know, Lola, you know, I trust that Lola can handle herself. And isn't it interesting? You don't feel that, you know, or you've not said that about, or is that too accusatory?
I don't think I would say you. I think I would say, isn't it weird? No one ever asked that ever says that about guys. Like no one. I would want to put that on the society and not on the person who's talking, because I do think it is a societal norm. Everything we're talking about, I'm sure this has to be an incredibly relatable thing, right? I'm not the only one going through this.
I love that response, right? I mean, because it's inviting, but you're also saying like, whoa, 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 rejecting the premise, right? Like, I'm going to stop you right there, but in a nice way of like, isn't that so strange? And no one ever says anything like that about, you know, to us about our son. Like, they just never do. Like, and inviting them into curiosity about that.
Yeah.
That might be enough for a cocktail party, right? That might be enough to just mark the comment in time and just say, I just want to flag the premise we're operating with and how problematic that premise is.
And then move on to football.
No, yep. Continue the conversation.
Lisa's saying move on to football.
No, and continue the conversation that I do. I mean, there's been a discussion amongst my friends about how especially as an aging woman, but as, you know, my daughter comes of age, that there is this expectation of this beauty standard that it holds such value that if you don't look a certain way, you are not valued by men, but you're not valuable enough to have this conversation. And I can feel some people who are listening are rolling their eyes, but until you've lived that experience,
right.
It is a very real true thing. And so I thought it was so interesting when Penn brought this up. I was like, and he's not one to necessarily dive into gender issues. And I was so, when he brought it up, I was like, wow, you're right. Like, if it bothers you, it's troublesome.
I've been trying to be more active in this, particularly with my daughter, for two reasons. I think, and honestly, I'm going to compliment Dr. Lisa, because in the first like 10 pages of Entangled, she made the point that guys, you don't get a pass for this part of her life. You don't say, okay, I'll be in the cellar with my shotgun until this is all over. Like, we need to be active parts of this. And for that reason, I want to be inclusive in this conversation. And I think the best way to do it is to just give guys a break when it comes to this, because this really is almost like, this is what we watched. Like, my generation watched all of these conversations go on with our parents. Like, it's been around for a long, long time. So I want to give everybody grace about this, right?
Yeah, I think there's grace. And just as long as there's it's met also with a willingness to, just like, you know, Dr. Lisa, in the very beginning, how you said, you know, to use your title, either Dr. Lisa or Dr. Damore, when that was brought up to you, you welcomed that. And I welcomed that as somebody who's interacting with you in this way. Like, when I learn something, I try to bring it into practice. So hopefully when you reply with this pen, it's met with that same curiosity.
And I think one of the ways to make it work that way is just to be to be nice about it and to give them some grace, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, the way I think about that all the time is, like, there's lyrics and there's tune, you know, so the lyrics are the words we say and tune is how we say them. And I will tell you, 99% of the time in my private practice, that's what I'm using. I'm saying actually very direct and maybe hard things to hear, but I'm controlling my tone to make it palatable, to make it tolerable. Like, it doesn't do any good to say something useful in a way that just inspires defenses and makes people want to, you know, go away. I'm thinking, Penn, about what you said about really wanting to be present in this part of Lola's life. And I'm thinking about the protective force that all parents have. And then maybe, who knows, because of cultural reason, dads have about their daughters, right? I mean, we sort of have that trope working mm-hmm. here. And I'm thinking about how you can put that on the ground. And part of the way you do it is in the atmosphere of how you're always treating Lola, right? Your ever respectful attitude towards her, right? Your, you know, kind of admiring attitude. Because what you're laying down, and we're doing this all the time as parents, is this is how you should expect to be treated outside of the house as mm-hmm. well. So mm-hmm. there's a lot that happens without words being said. I also imagine, like, I'm picturing, I don't know if she's gone on dates yet, it's not my business, you know, whatever. But I'm like, there may be a day, you know, if she decides she's going to date boys, where a young man shows up at your door, right? Or, you know, she set it out for the evening. And I'm picturing that, you know, the half hour before, you know, her date comes. And I'm wondering what it would feel like. And I'm not recommending this. I'm just like, let's just play in this space. I'm wondering what it would feel like if you just said to her, I think you know this, but I'm going to say the words. You deserve to be treated with nothing short of total respect and total dignity. And anyone, and maybe especially any guy who does not treat you that way, you don't have time for him.
Boy, I love that. And I honestly think that she's heard that from her mom. I don't know if she's heard that from her dad. So thank you for those words. I think she knows that I think that, but I've never actually said those exact words. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think she sees a marriage modeled in that, but there's something about saying the words out loud that I think would mm-hmm. be especially impactful.
And that's why she started it with, I know you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah, especially trying to tell a teenager, love my teenager, but trying to tell her something. And also, like, this is sidebar.
Getting into that part of it.
Sidebar that with both my kids.
I'm laughing.
Oh, I'm laughing too. I'm right there with you.
Oh my gosh. The fact that both of my children answer everything I say to them.
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
I know. Yep. They answer everything with, I know. I'm like, no, you don't, or you would not have asked the question. And I'm like, the most vulnerable thing you can say is, I don't know.
Thank you.
So we're trying to work, like, even helping my 12-year-old put his contacts in today. I'm like, okay, you got to move it to the left, buddy. He's like, I know. I'm like, if you knew, you would have done it.
It gets, I'm sorry, I'm back. I said I was going to be back in 5 minutes. I'm back now.
No, okay, so, I'm done.
No,
okay.
But he'll ask me, hey, Dad, what time is practice tonight? And I'm like, oh, it's at 8:30. And he'll say, I know.
And I'm like,
why did you ask the question? She's like, no, I mean, I know now that you told me. I'm like, that's not how you respond
but
to learning something.
Okay, so let me... let me unpack this a little bit, because it looks so beautiful and it's so adolescent, and I just want to like really lay out what the dynamic.
Unpack it.
It's so gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. Well, so let's start with the 8:30 practice thing, and then let's go back to, you know, how Lola's likely to respond when you say these words to her, which is that she's going to roll her eyes and be like, oh my God, why would you even, right? Like, that's going to be the reaction you get.
Right.
So the thing that I hold most true and dear about teenagers is, more than anything else in the world, they are designed to become independent. They want to be autonomous. Mm-hmm. And I think that micro interaction when he's like, what time is practice? Which is, I'm dependent on you. And you're like, it's at 8:30. And he's like, I know. He's like, I was dependent. Now I'm independent again. I'm totally independent. I've known this the whole time. Why are you telling me anything? Right? Like that they are just. And I remember learning this. I have all these moments in my work as a clinician where I learned something that I've never forgotten. And I was caring for a terrific junior girl in my practice who totally had it together. She was a really great kid in a million ways. And she came in, I saw her on Friday afternoons, and she came in the worst mood, and that wasn't common for her. And I'm like, what's the story? And she's like, oh, I worked so hard all week. My room was a total mess just because I had so much else going on. And I had an hour set aside before our appointment to clean my room so it would be beautiful for the weekend. And when I walked in the house, my mom told me I had to clean my room. So I spent the hour fighting with her about how I wouldn't clean my room. And now I'm here and I'm so mad because my room's a mess.
Oh.
I was like, oh my goodness. Like, the kid was walking to do it.
To do it.
And as soon as it became at the parent's instruction, like, it was over. So I think that's really essential. But then if we go back to, you know, Penn, if you say these words to Lola, right, if she's going on a date with a guy and you say these words and she goes, oh my gosh, why would you do that? That's so weird. Why are you making it all so weird? Right. She gives you that kind of reaction. I think what we want to remember when kids say, I know, or I eye roll, or why are you being like that? Or, you know, why are you telling me this thing that's so totally obvious? I think what we want to remember is we're not going to get the reaction we might think we want, which is for them to say, oh my gosh, thank you so much.
I've learned so much from you.
That input, right? Like, that's never going to happen, right? So, like,
but that's what they mean?
That's what they mean is, I heard you. Like, I take eye rolling as, I heard you.
Okay. Okay. I can deal with that.
Yeah. Or we could just tell them to say, they're not going to ever do that. I got you. Because they want to be independent. I understand.
They have to be independent. Yep, I got you. They have to. They're built for it. And our job is to not react to it.
Okay. Well,
this is good.
I definitely reacted this morning.
Unless it's super rude. Sometimes they're super rude, at which point you can react.
Okay. Yes. There was some rudeness. There was some sass. I was in a mood.
Could it have been your tune, your tone? What was it? She said something. Tone versus tune.
That was just one example of, and I think our son is more guilty than our daughter at this stage, but I think he is in that he's 12 and a half. He's getting to that. And we know, because I read your book, that this is like it is his job to find his tribe and to grow more independent. So every time he says, I know, I have to reframe that, but also gently say, you're an idiot. No, you don't. I won't say that.
Honestly, I think I know is his eye roll. I think I think they might both mean the same thing. Honestly, like, I know doesn't bother me that much because it's pretty easy to explain. But if sometimes Lola eye rolls or goes, fine, and that actually means I hear you, that's a tough one to translate.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
And I will say, like, we try not to make this stuff so about our kids. This needed to be, because this is a very specific thing that, you know, Penn went through. But I will say our kids have done a beautiful job of growing and developing so far, despite our best efforts to just totally sabotage it because we're pretty clueless. But somebody said something interesting to me the other night, and it's somebody who works within the education space, saying that, like, to the same end, like, sophomores, like, the attitude and emotions of a sophomore, it's like the worst of the high school experience. And I had never heard that before. And
here we are.
So I'm like tiptoeing around it. And that's not what we're experiencing yet. That's not what we're experiencing. But
I'm not sure I agree. I'm not sure I agree with that.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I would say, you know, in terms of challenging authority, you know, ninth grade is often very common for that. We're also, of course, looking at a bit of a developmental lag for some kids because of the pandemic. So it's hard to locate things in time as we used to. But I will say, sophomore year, in my experience, over the course of the year, things really even out quite a bit. Mm. Kids get a much better sense of who they are and what they're about. They have a much higher tolerance for kids who are not like them, or they're not needing to use their social group to define themselves anymore. In schools, sophomore year is often when kids start to talk again to kids they weren't talking to or didn't feel they could affiliate with at earlier points in development. So they tend to become better regulated in terms of their emotions. The height of dysregulation for teenagers is right around 13, 14. So, you know, they start to be easier in terms of their reactions to things are not as intense. And they do start to consolidate a sense of identity. They know more of who they are and what they're about. And so then they can be more accepting of others. So sophomore year and beyond is for me when teenagers become even like more delightful company than they've ever been. Like every bit is fascinating, but I mean, you give me a junior and I think they're like the greatest creatures on the planet in terms of interacting with adults, because they're super interesting and they're incredibly put together and they're still engaged with the adults around them in a particular way. Seniors have all that going on, but a lot of them are like, I'm out. I'm on the next thing. Like, I owe you nothing, which is totally fine and appropriate. Yes. But I think juniors are magic.
Okay. Well, this is all good to hear, because I didn't want it to be like this self-fulfilling prophecy. But again, not what I experienced. Now, you did mention the developmental delay. I have talked with a pediatrician friend about this as well. She feels like there is, like, socially this, you know, two-year delay of just socially what she's seeing in especially younger kids. Are you seeing that in older kids too?
I think I am. Okay. I think I am. You know, and I think so much of it is kids socialize one another by being in each other's company, you know, putting social pressure to act one way or another, and usually hopefully act in more mature ways as they age. So if you ground kids for 18 months, you're going to lose that. I mean, there's no getting around it. Is this, you know, disastrous? No, they'll figure it out. Development is long. It bends towards health. But what I have seen, and I think really kind of really reboots the importance of working on this, is kids not knowing how to handle conflict very well. Mm. You know, conflict absolutely comes with being a human being, and certainly a human being in groups, and certainly a human being who spends all day, every day with kids that you did not choose. We really need to help kids manage it in ways that are, you know, assertive and respectful, as opposed to, you know, talking about people or, you know, involving everybody else in a conflict or just, you know, being rude. I think some of that has felt lagging in their development.
I feel like that's lagging in a lot of what I'm seeing out of adults, too.
Yeah, I'm about to jump in there. I think every single, we call it the blip here because we're Marvel fans. Mm. I think that it's definitely happened in adults, but it's interesting to see it happening in children, because their bodies are maturing and they look like they're 15. And that can probably be jarring for an observer on the outside to see like a young adult have a different set of social skills than they may have had 3 or 4 years ago, because it really, I mean, it didn't stunt anyone's physical growth, but it stunted everyone's emotional growth.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think that's right. And it's interesting to sort of circle this back. You know, Penn, your question was like, people are saying this thing to me. I don't like it. It's weird. But I want to react to it in a way that actually advances the conversation or moves things in a meaningful way, or maybe even has some teaching in it. So your commitment to handling this conflict in a way that is growth giving, right? This is what we need adults to be doing around kids. And I do worry when I watch how adults are handling conflict in front of kids. I'm like, okay, guys, like, we're not the role models we need to be to help kids up their game in terms of dignified conflict and respectful disagreement.
Yeah, that's a whole different podcast, but that's not what's being modeled right now. And if you read social media comments on things, it'd make you wanna stab your eyes out. Anyway, well, thank you for your time. And as we said before, we will link all of Dr. Lisa DeMore's like resources and books and all of that, just podcast, all that good stuff in the show notes.
Can I end with a potentially invasive personal question for you?
Sure.
We're at a cocktail party. Go for sure. It.
Yes. I don't know if this is invasive or not, Dr. Lisa, but one of the things I took away from you, and we've actually heard this from Christopher Edmondson, the guy who helped us write our book, which was, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I think that that is at the center of a lot of the things that we talked about. So you personally have this, like we talked about it last podcast, you have this like crazy hypnotic voice.
Yeah, very ASMR.
It's definitely ASMR. Well, I said it was ASMR last time, but now I'm going more hypnotic. Like I think you could tell me to do something and I would do it just because of the tone of your voice. And I'm wondering, because like you have a professional responsibility to try to encourage people to do things. Did you like work on that, or is this how you've always sounded? And if it is how you've always sounded, you have like the perfect voice for a therapist/counselor. But it seems like
have her cell phone number now. So if I need you to do
just
something,
call
I
me
may
and
just
read the newspaper.
I'm just going to hold up the cell phone and get Dr. Lisa to like.
Penn, I need you to stop putting your clothes next to the hamper, but in the hamper. No, I am curious about your voice.
Yeah, though. No, I think this has always been my voice. Like, okay. I do think it's always been my voice. But it's interesting because, you know, so much of your training as a psychologist is trying to figure out how to say things in a way that doesn't inspire people to feel hurt or defensive or reactive, right? Like, that's really the job. And it's interesting because part of how we train is in supervision, where we meet with our supervisor and, you know, run down everything that happened in the last session. And then they give us guidance on what to do. And often that guidance involves them saying the words or saying the line that they want that will be useful in terms of moving things forward in the therapy. And so there is a lot of internalizing how seasoned clinicians phrase things, and I'm sure the tone and I'm sure the tune, in the name of helping people change. And so you're onto something. I mean, the goal isn't to have it be like weirdly hypnotic and like using the power of suggestion.
But the goal is
change, right? That's why people come for therapy. Yeah. And I think it would be so funny to do like a spoof like TV show of like a brilliant therapist with the most off-putting voice,
like Gilbert Gottfried. Yeah. So,
exactly. So they're saying like totally useful things, but in a way that is just like, oh my God, get me out of here. Right. So there, I mean, I don't know if I think this has been my voice my whole life, but I will say when it came to the question of reading my books, my publisher on the first book, initially, they were like, here's the pro who's going to read your book. And I was like, no, absolutely not. It's got to be me, because I'm trying to model for parents how to talk to kids.
Gottfried. This is Untangled, guiding teenage girls through the 7 transitions into adulthood.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like that. Was it Gilbert Gottfried?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, but I'm so grateful for you guys. And thank you for mentioning my resources. And I will tell you, the third season of Ask Lisa, my podcast with my wonderful co-host, Rena Ninen, August 30th is our start date for that. So
great.
We're so thrilled. And I find you guys so incredibly wonderful to talk to. And I'm just so grateful for you.
And now I have your cell phone number. So I'm just warning you.
Do you want to get her to, like, we're here. Do you want to get her to encourage me to do something with her hypnosis?
Only uses her powers for good. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Lisa DeMoor. We'll talk to you soon.
Wonderful.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Lisa. Okay. So Penn called her Dr. Lisa. I called her Dr. DeMoor. In the beginning, she did say we could call her Dr. Lisa, so I don't want you to feel like Penn was getting overly familiar there or not respecting the boundaries, because she did say...
No, we had an open and active conversation.
I just don't know if it was the conversation that our friends heard, so okay. I just want to make sure to kind of defend you in that. Isn't she dreamy?
She's great.
I just want... I wish that... Well, I think we sabotaged her audio equipment, so she had to call us. And I'm kidding, we didn't sabotage it. So now I have her cell phone number, and I won't actually stalk her.
Seems like you're going
to
stalk her.
No, but what I just love is just the openness to have the conversation and approach these things with grace for ourselves. This time of parenting, these teenage years, is so fun. I don't know. I wouldn't wish it, away. I mean, I think I had written a blog post at some point that people were like, oh, you know, just wait till she's a teenager. She's going to be a nightmare. No, I maintain that this is my favorite part. I was not a... I love the smushiness of my kids when they were babies, but I wasn't I didn't ever feel confident in what I was doing when they were itty bitty. You know, I felt more nervous and anxious when they were itty bitty. Jump in front of a train for them, but it was like, everybody was like, oh my gosh, isn't this like the best? I'm like, oh, this is really hard. I love this stage of it, but to that end, I feel more like we're on the record now. I feel like the things
like
we're
this is going
now,
on our transcript,
right?
This is going on our parenting transcript,
our permanent
what we're
record.
Doing now.
Like
yeah,
the stuff, the language we're using now, they'll remember. Whereas when they were 18 months old, I mean, it's important. It's all important. But I just feel like it's
the mistakes are inevitable and usually forgotten.
Yeah, when they're 18 months.
Understood.
But now when they're 15 and 12, I just feel like it's all on the record. And I'm hyper aware of the language we need to be using in our house and how to build confidence and build good people.
I'm glad that we have friends who can give us such insight and thought. And she just let us know, and this is a little bit into the future, but she's got another book coming out that we'll be hopefully having her back to talk about. So that's something to look forward to for us. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning into the Holderness Family Podcast. If you made it this far, there's a little trick you can do.
What is that?
You can take a screenshot of you finishing it. And what I forgot, what is it? Never understood that.
Tag us on Instagram stories.
Yeah, then tag us on Instagram. Sorry, I'm so bad at Instagram stories. Yeah.
So anyway, so you take a picture of it. And you screenshot it,
okay.
And then you tag us, and then and you put in Instagram stories, and then I love to see it and reply to it and just
got
connect
it
with you guys.
You always suggested that, and I never understood it.
Oh, Penn,
so I tried. I'm so bad at Instagram stories.
It's okay, and you don't need to be good at it.
I've got other stuff I gotta do.
You got other stuff you need to do. Well, I love you guys, and thank you for listening. And I hope it was helpful, because it was helpful to me.
Me too.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.